Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the seventh floor of Trib Tower here until 5 o'clock, and then we'll hang out for hour number one of the Steve Cochran Show. And we're doing Halloween stuff this morning. Coming up later on, we're going to be talking about the best and worst Halloween-themed TV episodes of all time. And we've got a bunch of those to talk about. But right now, I want to welcome back to the show the author of several horror books, including Zombie Illinois and Zombie Indiana. His latest book is called The Grand Hotel. He's going to be doing a reading and a signing at City Lit Books, 2523 North Kedzie, 6:30 p.m. on Halloween night, Friday. And Scott Kenmore, welcome back to the studio. How are you doing, man?
Hello, I'm really good. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Congratulations on the new book.
Thanks.
And tell everybody about the zombie trilogy that you...
The zombie. So I am probably mostly known for writing a series of three books, Zombie Ohio, Zombie Illinois, and Zombie Indiana, about an outbreak, and it's sort of shown from the perspective of three different Midwestern states. Zombie Ohio is probably my best-selling book of all time. But I like to sort of, I've lived in each one of those states, and I like to sort of explore like how the governments and the people and the social strata would react if like you had this natural disaster. It's sort of an unnatural disaster in the form of like zombies coming up and eating everyone's brains. So yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
And your personal experience living in these places informed the books, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, I think Chicago, we talk so much about Chicago politics and like these craven scramblings to get ahead and how can I become alderman and get to City Hall. And so most of what Zombie Illinois is about, for example, is how I think Chicago politicians would use a disaster like this to say, like, how can I further my career? What if the mayor dies and we make it look like a zombie did it, and then we kill the vice mayor, and then we vote in our person? And, you know, I think, sadly, that sort of stuff might happen around here the way people are. So,
yeah.
But it's also lots of, like, zombie violence and brain eating. And so there's that. There's always that.
There's always that, too. Well, you got to have
that.
You got to have that. So where were you originally from?
I'm from, I grew up in Indiana. I went to high school there. So, yeah. But I've lived in Chicago about 10 years. Love this town. Great place. I live in Logan Square, where the reading is coming up. But more like Brogan Square, I got to say, these days. Bros moving in. It has changed.
I remember Logan Square from the 70s, man.
And that's got to be a whole other.
Oh, it's a whole, it's like Wicker Park used to be. Like Wicker Park was like, you know, you can get an apartment for $300 a month in Wicker Park, and of course you might get killed.
Yeah.
but now, you know, it used to be a little scary to walk down the streets in Wicker Park.
Yeah, I can remember 10 years ago when I first moved there, I could go for a jog in Logan Square in Palmer Square Park.
Yeah.
And summer nights, I could smell three different varieties of marijuana being smoked in different like quadrants of the park.
Yeah.
And now it's like $2,000 baby strollers and zero marijuana smells.
It's amazing
what
how
happened?
That's what
zombies
happened? Where are all the pot smokers?
Zombies,
man?
And gentrification.
Yeah. It happens in almost every neighborhood.
Yeah.
I think the only neighborhood that where they've attempted gentrification and changing and it just won't stick is Uptown. I think that's kind of the only place that's left in the city. And Rogers Park is a little scary too. There's some weirdness going on there too. But I think Uptown is still got that like, you know, dangerous feel to it. Go hang out in front of Truman College and, you know, and see if you can't spot a bunch of weirdness there.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. Yeah. That sounds good.
When did you start writing, Scott?
I've always liked writing stories. I think when I was a little kid, I was interested in creative writing and I took creative writing classes and. I always liked horror, and my favorite writers were folks like H.P. Lovecraft and Stephen King and Peter Straub and Anne Rice and just people like that. I've always sort of tried to emulate my heroes but also do my own thing, and I always loved zombie movies, and that was sort of like I think my foray into at least into being published was to writing stories that came out of my love of zombies, let's say. But then the Grand Hotel, my new book, is it's sort of more of like a classical ghost story or series of ghost stories. But for the zombie fans, there's a lot of stuff that's very zombish that have. I'm gonna say whether this is necessarily a zombie.
Yeah.
I don't want to betray the secret of the Grand Hotel, but it's very zombish stuff going
on.
Okay.
All right. I think you just made that word up.
Yeah.
I think a new word has just been created
totally.
Right here on the show. Absolutely. zombies are my favorite. You know, horror. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
Horror is my favorite genre.
Yes.
I mean, I started watching horror movies when I was just a wee lad.
That's awesome.
And I started with the, as a lot of kids do, I started with the Universal movies. Mm-hmm. You know, Dracula, Frankenstein, all that Wolfman.
Sure.
And I'd watch Creature Features and Svengoolie. And then I moved on to the Hammer movies. Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, all those.
Sure.
And that kind of blew my mind when I first saw Hammer movies, because I had watched all the black and white old Universal horror movies, and I thought they were cool and creepy and awesome. But then, like, the Hammer movies, something happened inside me, because they were really colorful, and there was blood and a lot of boobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember going, oh, I like this. This is I can live with this, man.
Yeah.
So, and then just moved on from there. But my favorite genre is a zombie movie.
I think
the best zombie movie ever made is Dawn of the Dead.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
the original.
An excellent choice.
Yeah. Well, what's your favorite zombie movie?
I got to say Return of the Living Dead.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that the last time you were here.
I love that zombies ask for brains by name. I think that's just delightful.
It's also hilarious.
Yeah.
It's also a really funny movie and really gory. And there's some really funny stuff. And James Caan is hysterical in that movie.
I think I told you I got to meet him at a horror convention last year. He was like 89.
Yeah.
And he like signed my poster, and I got to, and he made fun of my hair, which just made me so happy. Like, James Caan made fun of my hair. This is wonderful. And I met his wife. I was just beside myself.
Yeah.
He's so great.
Yeah. Return of the Living Dead, which was 1985.
Yes, and Dan O'Bannon, the guy
Dan
who did
O'Bannon.
Alien,
the late great Dan O'Bannon.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a punk rock zombie comedy.
That's
is
a
what
great
it was.
Description
and a great one. That's a great choice. Yeah, and the original Dawn of the Dead to me is just like sort of that's the one. You know, I mean, obviously the blueprint is Night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I just think he took it. I think he took Night of the Living Dead a bunch of steps further with Dawn.
Oh yeah, Ken Foree is just amazing
man.
In that. He's such a good actor.
And that's another movie that still holds up. You know, the zombie, the blood looks a little fake. The zombies look a little too green.
Sure.
But I mean, you know, it was
too
limited
green.
Budget. Yeah,
it was
a limited budget. Tom Savini did the effects. You know,
yeah.
And so yeah, but I love it, and I've never been to them. I always wanted to go to that mall in Pittsburgh. It's still there.
Yeah, Monroeville.
Monroeville,
think,
yeah, but they don't acknowledge it. They don't like have a plaque, or they don't even talk about it.
I've heard that there are unlicensed tours, like zombie tours. You can
sign
is up
that
for,
right?
But the mall is not officially involved.
Yeah,
it's just some guy in his van who drives you there and walks, shows you this is where the fortification
right,
was,
right.
And this is where.
All right. Well, listen, hang on for a second. Scott Kenmore is with us. We're going to get into more zombie stuff, more horror stuff, and The Grand Hotel is the novel. You can see him read, and we're actually going to hear a piece from you're going to do a little reading from the
okay.
book. Yeah, and we'll hear that. That's from The Grand Hotel and Halloween Night at City Lit Books on Kedzie. And you can check it out then at 6:30. Quick break. We got the news coming up and then more coming up on WGN. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor, Trib Tower, hanging out till 5 a.m. on a Tuesday morning here. And then we'll be a part of hour one of the Steve Cochran Show. Coming up a little bit later on, we're going to talk about the best and worst Halloween-themed TV episodes of all time. This is Halloween week. And in honor of Halloween week, my guest in studio with me right now is Scott Kenmore. He's the author of several horror books, including Zombie Illinois, Zombie Indiana, Zombie Ohio. And his latest book is called The Grand Hotel. And he'll be hosting a reading and a signing on Halloween night at City Lit Books on Kedzie. It begins at 6:30. We have a link on our website, on our Facebook page, with his website and all the information right there.
Yeah, and I know my peeps from the Chicago chapter of the Horror Writers Association,
mm-hmm.
definitely going to be there. So if you're an aspiring horror writer, you've written a little bit, you know, absolutely come out and talk to our people. It's a really, like, inclusive group. We've got.
Well, tell me a little bit about how that organization. Do you know, like, the history of the organization?
Yeah, well, I don't know how long it's been around. It's a national organization run by, international, actually, run by a gentleman named Rocky Wood, who's, like, one of the greatest living Stephen King experts, who, like, knows so much about Stephen King that Stephen King hires him to do, like, background stuff when he's writing a sequel to a book he wrote, like, 20 years ago.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
You
know, wow.
You Google him. He's a super nice man. He just like he's blowing me away. Like he suffers from ALS, but he is so even though he can't speak now, he is so incredibly sharp and incredibly bright.
Wow!
And the stuff he'll do, like, wonderful gentleman. But no, it's just an association of people who write horror and like horror, and you can be a member if you just write fan fiction on the internet, or you can be a member if you're Stephen King, as Stephen King is. So, but there's a Chicago chapter, and I know a bunch of folks are going to be there on Halloween at my reading. So. If you want to come out and just talk to other horror fans, because we have monthly meetings, but a lot of it is just like cocktails and talking about things like, mm-hmm. the worst Halloween episode of a TV show.
Right.
It's exactly that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So
that's cool, man. Very, very cool.
Super nice folks.
So we were just talking a little bit off the air about, you know, some of the panels that you have appeared on. And we were just talking about you appearing with Max Brooks.
Yeah.
Probably the most famous zombie writer.
Yes, he's super, super famous. The last 4 or 5 years, we've done a panel at Comic-Con San Diego about zombies that has had also Steven Schlossman, who wrote the zombie autopsies, and Matt Moak, who many folks may know from the show The Talking Dead that comes on after The Walking Dead. And we talk about zombies and answer really crazy, sometimes really messed up questions from people.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, you know, zombie fans are a unique breed.
Yeah. Yeah, they just want to, can I get a zombie pregnant? Can a zombie get me pregnant? What if we have a half zombie baby? We just sort of look at each other and go, oh, who wants to fall on the grenade this time to save the rest of the platoon?
Yeah, all right. Well,
Max,
that's
jump
fun.
In.
Yeah,
most
Max,
famous.
Take care of
you're
it. You're
the most famous.
Famous.
You
your dad
in.
Is Mel Brooks, so go ahead and tell your stories. So, well, all right. So tell us about the Grand Hotel. The last time you were here, you were working on it. So, you were very clever with this book. Because
thank you for saying I wonder what I've done.
Well, it's just you've managed to make a novel and a collection of short stories.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, it was very clever of you how you did that.
Yeah.
Tell everybody about the Grand Hotel.
Well, so I like old-timey stories that are like games. Stuff like Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, and especially this story cycle from India that I based the Grand Hotel on really closely called The 5-and-20 Tales of the Genie. But I like stories and tales and works that are that have sort of an element of a game to them, and you have a character who's trying to solve a mystery, but in doing so he has to unlock puzzles or solve riddles or sort of this sort of thing. So what I love about the 5-and-20 Tales of the Genie is it's a story about a king who has to hear these 25 stories, and after every story he gets asked a question about this like crazy story he's just heard, and it's a test. And if in order for him to like move on and solve his quest and get to the next story, he's got to figure out what was the answer to the riddle in this story. What was the thing I was supposed to take from it? And so
you said this comes from India.
Yeah. So
how old is it?
It was written down in Sanskrit, they think, about 1200. But it was probably orally composed, like back when Beowulf was composed, like into the single hundreds.
Jeez.
But it's an awesome story about this, and what drew me to it as a horror writer is the device is the king has to carry this corpse over his shoulder, and the corpse is possessed by a genie, hence the Tales of the Genie, and so the corpse talks to him and like tells these stories into his ear with its corpse mouth, and he's got to like...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they thought of this, whatever, like almost over 1,000 years ago, probably. And so I was really inspired by that. So the Grand Hotel is, on one level, it's a story about a group of visitors who come to this mysterious hotel that's run down and 100 years past its prime, and they meet this sort of mysterious... desk clerk, the overnight clerk, who is my narrator, who says, well, you know, I could show you around this place if you're curious. You know, we've got a few people who still live here. And then they go from room to room and meet different residents of the hotel, and each resident tells them a story. But as they go forward, you realize each story is sort of a riddle that they have to solve in order to move forward. So each room they go to sort of has its own mystery and its own story that they have to figure out. And then towards the end, maybe they figure out exactly what the Grand Hotel is and what's going on there.
That's cool, man.
Which is scary. It's a scary answer. The thing they find out is scary.
Now, in structuring this, how many residents did you pick?
So
did you have to cut some stories?
I used 10, ultimately. Because I thought about trying to do 25, but I think the stories would have had to have been too short. And you know, because there are definitely things about works that were written a long time ago. Like, you know, you notice that if you read something like Beowulf or something, that you sort of feel like this audience was expecting very different things than a modern audience is expecting. And there you have a lot of moments of like, so why are you telling me this? Like,
yeah.
How is this going to factor in? So I tried to like streamline, you put it that way. But I also use this to tell sort of a lot of my favorite ghost stories and ghost stories I grew up loving, but within this framework and within the idea of a game or a mystery.
Wow. Well, that's cool, man. That's really, really cool. And is it you know, so the reader themselves,
yeah,
are they trying to figure it out too? Not just the characters in the book.
I think that's the fun. Yeah, is you're trying to figure out what's the answer to this? Why is this the story? What does this tell me about the hotel? How am I closer to learning what's actually going on here? What this place is?
And what about the Chicago connections in the stories?
Yeah, so I live in Chicago, so sometimes I just set stuff in Chicago, but I'm fascinated by the South Side of Chicago. I worked there for 5 years in community development. So one of the stories is about a house on the South Side of Chicago that's haunted, where gangsters have been like dumping bodies since like before Capone, like way back in the day. And so in Kenwood neighborhood, basically. One of the other stories takes place, a large part of it, at the Abbey on Elston, the music venue bar.
The Irish
place? Yeah, just because I like that place. And yeah. I thought this would be a good place to have this ghost show up in this story. And
oh, that's cool.
And so you get to see the Abbey and see if you think I describe it right.
Do the guys at the Abbey know about this?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't know if I would get a free drink or not be welcome back.
Yeah.
One or the other.
Yeah. I love the Abbey. I used to live very close to the Abbey.
I think it's a good place.
I do too. I like it as well. That's pretty cool, man. So you haunted the Abbey. Is the Abbey haunted?
It feels like it would be. It sort of has that sensibility as a structure, but I've never been told that it is.
Hmm. And now, each story within the Grand Hotel.
Yeah.
Is it a different genre? Are you trying to touch on different horror genres throughout the book?
I don't know if I'm touching on different horror genres, but I'm telling different horror stories, and some of them are just things that I entirely wove out of whole cloth, and other things are, you know, there's one story that's very sort of Lovecraftian, there's one that's very like things that go bump in the night, sort of a story you tell around a campfire to a little kid.
Oh, cool.
All different kinds, and there are a couple that are like straight out of the 5 and 20 Tales of the Genie, this ancient India thing that I like so much.
How did you find that book?
You know,
I was
early for Indian food, meeting someone up on Devon, and I love to browse the bookshops up there. And I think something that a lot of people don't know is the bookshops on Devon have lots of books that are written in English and published for English-speaking people in India. Then they're just brought over here. So this was like an edition I found that was like Penguin or maybe Random House.
Really?
Just like a publisher I knew. But it was aimed at an Indian audience, but in English. And I thought, you know, I read, you know, A Corpse Whispers into a King's Ear. I was like, I have to buy this book.
Yeah.
And I got, like, obsessed with it. And I guess it's much better known overseas. But, if I make anyone interested in reading that book, then The Grand Hotel was a success.
Okay.
It's really fascinating.
All right, cool. All right, well, hang on, Scott. Hang on. We're going to hear a portion of the book.
Okay.
Yeah, give us a reading. And Scott, by the way, is going to be at the City Lit Books on Kedzie this Friday, Halloween night, starting at 6:30. He's going to read and sign copies of The Grand Hotel, and we're going to hear a little bit of the book coming up here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio, that's me. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of Trib Tower. Here till 5, as we are every weekday morning, and then hanging out for hour one of the Steve Cochran Show. Phone number is 312-981-7200. You can also send text to that same number. Check us out on Twitter, and like us at facebook.com/NickDShow. Scott Kenmore is my guest, live in studio. He's the author of several horror books, including Zombie Illinois and Zombie Indiana, and his latest book is The Grand Hotel. There's going to be a reading and a signing on Halloween this Friday at City Lit Books, 2523 North Kedzie. It begins at 6:30. We have a link on our Facebook page with all the information. Scott, welcome back, sir.
Hello, good to be here.
Yeah. So, thank you. We have a text coming in.
Okay.
So let me see what this is. When writing The Grand Hotel, did any stories change as he was writing them? Was there a section he had one plan for and it changed halfway through?
Wow. So I will tend to work from outlines for projects like this, but sometimes I do get ideas going, I guess, as something's going along. And one springs to mind. So I've liked for a long time the idea of a cooking show, like a TV cooking show, where they accidentally cook a person somehow, where somehow a person gets cooked. So one of the stories is about that, and it's from the point of view of a production crew on a reality show called Ghost Chef, where they go to different haunted places and cook, like the regional fair, but then, accidentally a person gets cooked. And so I that story, and I can't go into it without giving it away, but that did sort of evolve when I thought, what are the ways that a person could accidentally get cooked for real in an exotic locale on a reality show today?
Wow.
I think I pulled it off.
Okay.
I'm pretty proud.
That's pretty cool, man. That's a good idea.
But no, that's a good question.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, why don't we hear a little bit of this? Tell us what we're going to hear. This
okay,
is from the Grand Hotel.
I've never done this, but I've never read on the air before. Again, as I said in the last segment, the Grand Hotel is sort of narrated by this mysterious night clerk who might be the devil, who might be an angel. We don't know exactly what his deal is. I mean, he's just a weird guy, just a weird old guy. And he's leading this tour group through a hotel, and the tour group is beginning to realize that at every stop they have sort of a different mystery to solve as they listen to a story or a different riddle to solve.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read you just a couple, three pages here when they first enter the hotel portrait gallery.
Okay.
Because portrait galleries are scary.
Yeah, they are.
I had to have a gallery. So
yeah, okay.
All right, so here we go. What is it precisely about a gallery of portraits that so contains the power to unnerve us? Paintings are just paintings, no matter how lifelike. They are oil on canvas. They are immobile. They can't touch us or speak to us. We hang them on the wall at our pleasure. We can cover them with a cloth if we like. At every point, we are the ones in control. And yet, their uncanny effect upon us never quite dissipates. When entering the reception room that serves as the de facto portrait gallery of the Grand Hotel, one cannot help but be startled when the coterie of framed faces first comes into view. The reception room is almost perfectly circular, you see, and so the portraits lining the walls tend to give one the feeling of being surrounded. The expressions on the painted figures vary, but most typically indicate mistrust. Smiles are rare. Genuine-looking smiles, even rarer. Though they seem uniformly suspicious of the first-time visitor, the portraits are homogeneous in perhaps this aspect only. Some members of the gallery are recent additions painted by artists who are still very much alive, showing subjects that are likewise living. Other portraits give the appearance of possessing great antiquity and must almost certainly predate the hotel itself. Because I am sometimes asked, I often start by admitting that the provenance of these paintings in our gallery is not uniformly known. A guest once pointed out that a canvas showing a pale boy in a creek seemed to match the description of a long-lost Vermeer. Another swore that the portrait of a wealthy landowner whose worldly possessions, arrayed in the opulent salon behind him, seemed to dance in the air as if possessed by spirits, was a dead ringer for a stolen De Gelder. Errant Dutchman aside, it is true that most of the paintings predate my time at the hotel, and therefore my knowledge of the circumstances surrounding their acquisition. From what I have heard, the reception room became our gallery organically, over time, as different works were hung within. One person placed a portrait, then a different person placed another, and so on. Yet even though the origin of many of the works is mysterious, the collection never gives the impression of a random arrangement. To the contrary, it is clear that the paintings on our gallery have been very carefully curated. The faces that line these walls complement one another with eerie regularity. Here we see the fat, clowning buffoon, clad in medieval garb, an archaic conical hat adorning his head. Directly adjacent to him, the portrait of the smiling schoolgirl with her head tilted to one side. Her expression seems a direct response to the portly man's antics. To the westernmost side of the gallery, we see a terrifying crone who bristles and bares her teeth like an animal surprised. The figures in the paintings to either side of her seem to turn away. Directly across from her, on the east wall, a princess or noblewoman from the 18th century wrinkles her nose. Perhaps she finds the hag's appearance distasteful, or perhaps she is unsettled by the knowledge that the opposite canvas shows her own future, however distant. Each time I sidle through the swinging doors, the strange panopticon effect of the encircling portraiture is not lost on me. It is as if I, even after all these years, still have not completely earned their trust. They stare back at me silently with the same haunting suspicions. Yet it is something deeper that brings me unease. The true reason that the portraits are so jarring. It is, of course, the possibility that we are the portraits. Perhaps we hang on their walls. In that initial instant of confrontation, we wait for the face in the wooden frame to begin moving and speaking, and to find ourselves frozen into place. That they are the ones in power, and that we must be still forevermore.
Nice,
I'll
man.
Stop there.
Really nice.
Then there's a riddle they have to solve.
That's cool, man.
That's just when they
That's
the
cool.
Beginning.
Very cool, man. Creepy, man. Nice job. Good writing.
Thanks, Nick.
Hey, by the way, last week you got nominated for an award.
I did. The Chicago Writers Association, not the Horror Writers Association, but the Chicago Writers Association. For best fiction book of the year. I'm going to lose because there's some powerful people.
It's Zombie nominated. Indiana is the
Zombie
book
Indiana
nominated.
Was nominated. I'm not going to win, but it was nice to be nominated.
Well, congratulations, man. That's really great. So, are you working on anything now?
I'm giving myself the rest of the year off because this was a two-book year, which is really tough. Like, there's no consensus among writers about how much you should write. And so, because I try to write normally about a book a year. That seems reasonable. You write one page a day, you got a book in a year. Seems reasonable to me. But I'll talk to my, New York City literary set friends, and they'll be like, a book a year? Like, it's not a race, Kenmore. Like, could something be good if you only spend a year on it? And then I turn around and I go to the Bram Stoker Awards with these genre writers, and these are guys who write two, three, sometimes four books a year.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, if one is the best you can do, don't be hard on yourself. You know, eventually you'll get there. Do your homework, eat your vegetables.
Yeah.
Well, so for me, though, two books in a year is a lot of work, so I'm going to play a lot of PlayStation for the rest of this year.
There you go, man.
In my spare time.
Peggy sends in a text and says, I have read Zombie Illinois at least 5 times.
Oh, my gosh.
I love it. I hope to get the other 2 zombie books for Christmas. Thanks for the enjoyment.
Well, how nice, Peggy. Thank you for saying so.
773 area code says, I have always hated rooms full of paintings and have never been able to explain why. Thank you. That describes it perfectly.
That's just what scares me about it. I walk in and think maybe I'm the painting.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm all turned around on this who's the painting issue. I could be completely wrong.
I love that it's an issue. Well, congratulations on the book, man. Congratulations on the award nomination. Congratulations on PlayStation.
Yes. Gonna rock that Dragon Age 3 in just a few weeks.
There you go, man. And if you want to meet Scott and get a copy of The Grand Hotel signed and check out the reading, Halloween night, appropriately enough, at City Lit Books, 2523 North Kedzie. It begins at 6:30. We have a link on our Facebook page. And you also, scottkenmore.com. Always great to have you down here,
man.
Thank you
so much.
It's a real pleasure.
Awesome.
Happy Halloween and congratulations on the book.
And to you.
All right, take a quick break. We'll come back here on WGN.